We're talking with retired Colonel Ann Wright, who, among other things, many other things, helped to reopen the United States Embassy in Afghanistan back in 2001. And it was also a longtime employee of the United States State Department. In fact, is one of the few State Department officials who resigned over the invasion of Iraq. So as you watch this evacuation from Afghanistan, what's your thought? Is this a good idea the United States is finally withdrawing?
Well, yes, I've been calling for the withdrawal of the United States for 15 years. We did not need to be there for that time. $2 trillion we spent, the number of Afghan lives, probably several hundred thousand when you really start talking about it, 2,500 U.S. lives, another 4,000, well, military lives, 4,000 U.S. contractors, and then another 5,000 NATO troops. So it's been a brutal, brutal time. And what has it accomplished? I mean, the U.S. propensity for wars is very strong. And that's something that we need as citizens of the U.S. to stop our politicians from getting us into continual wars.
Now, one of the things I have read from some of the more progressive outlets is that, you know, perhaps the biggest recruiter for the Taliban and why they're gathering support has been, as you mentioned, sort of the brutal role of the American occupation. And while, you know, Americans may think that our soldiers comply with all the rules of war, that's not exactly the case on the ground. What have been some of the problems that the U.S. troops have really encountered in trying to, you know, pacify the local residents of the country?
Well, the night raids that the U.S. was a part of going in and saying we're going after the Taliban, we're going after Al-Qaeda, but beating down people's doors, shooting into homes, and turns out, nope, those weren't Taliban homes at all, but killing innocent civilians by the night raids, and also the assassin drone program that started under George Bush but went into steroids with Obama and increased even more with Trump, where silently from the sky, all of a sudden, a home is blown up or a convoy of cars is blown up. And it turned out that in many cases, there were no Taliban, there were no Al-Qaeda, there were just innocent civilians. So all of these factors were part of why the U.S. Was known as one of the terrorist organizations. That's what Malia Joya, the Nobel Peace Laureate, said from Afghanistan. She said, we've got three terrorist groups here. One's the Taliban, one's the government of Afghanistan, and the other one's the U.S. military.
Now, you mentioned the drone program, which is certainly much beyond Afghanistan at this point. But once, you know, the U.S. troops withdraw, how does that impact upon any drone operations, you know, in Afghanistan? Or, you know, what other effects might the residents be seeing for the United States post-withdrawal?
Well, the U.S. Said that once its forces were withdrawn, its 2,500 forces were withdrawn, it would continue to protect the Afghan government military forces by over-the-horizon military actions, and that would be by drones and by fighter aircraft. Well, now that there is no military of the former government of Afghanistan, I mean, those are the guys that kind of folded and fled in the face of the Taliban, one would wonder what is the U.S. going to do with those drones? Are they going to kill Taliban forces? Are they there are militant groups besides the Taliban that are there. And in fact, the U.S. military says that it's wary of perhaps an ISIS attack on the airport in Kabul while they're trying to evacuate people. So I would suspect the U.S. military will still have its assassin drones flying over Afghanistan, but it'll be interesting to see if they coordinate in any way with the Taliban about going after other militant groups.
Now, one of the issue, of course, is always, you know, who helped rebuild a country after 20 years of military occupation? What type of financial role should the United States be willing to play at this point?
Well, at this point, the U.S. has frozen the the $9 billion that the government of Afghanistan had put in U.S. banks. Also, the IMF has frozen the funds that were some $250 million that were the next allotment that was coming from the IMF to the government of Afghanistan. The World Bank has suspended its program. So, and the G7 countries have suspended programs that they've had with the government of Afghanistan. So unless the international community opens up some of these financial resources, the de facto government of Afghanistan, which is the Taliban, because the other government fled. And if we care for the people of Afghanistan, if we care that they have electricity, if we care that they have whatever, some of those funds are going to have to be released. Of course, some of them can be contingent on good behavior of the Taliban. We certainly want education to be there for girls and boys. We want health clinics to be there. So there is a way the international community can hold something over the Taliban, because they're going to need financial resources in order to do the basic government functions that the people of Afghanistan need.
I recently read an opinion piece in The Hill, which speculated that the tenure of the Taliban as the overarching central government in Afghanistan may not last a whole lot longer after the withdrawal, because they've been able to unite around removing the United States. And once that United States removal has occurred, it's more likely to go back to some of the tribal factions that have been prevalent before. Do you sort of agree that the Taliban, you know, may end up not being able to actually control the entire country moving forward?
Well, they controlled it from 1996 to 2001, when they defeated the same militias that that Financial Times article is talking about, the same militias of General Dostum, of Atta, of the son of Ahmed Massoud, of all of these other, these militia groups have been around for 20 years, have been around for 30 years since they were fighting the Soviets. I think that there probably will be some pushback from some of these militias against the Taliban. But right now, the Taliban, you know, it already had its forces, and I think many of the government trained, the military that the U.S. trained for the government of Afghanistan have gone over to the Taliban in a way that it's like, you all are going to win. If we don't join up with you, you're going to kill us. So let's just go over to you. So the Taliban, I think, has increased its power, military power, immensely. And I think these warlords who have been in the previous governments, who were corrupt, who were meaner than could be anyway, who had all sorts of allegations of criminal acts against them while they were in the government, the elected government of Afghanistan, I think they're going to have a very difficult time going against the Taliban.
We've been talking with Colonel Ann Wright. You know, is there one or two key points that you would advise President Biden to follow at this point? And if people want to get, you know, an accurate analysis of what's going on in Afghanistan, a particular good website, peace group?
Yes. Well, I would encourage President Biden to keep the U.S. embassy in Kabul open. If we are really concerned about the people of Afghanistan, then the U.S. needs to have a presence, not a military presence, but a diplomatic presence, so that some of the programs that have been reasonably successful in Afghanistan, and that some of the educational programs and some of the health programs can continue, and that we can be a part of the diplomatic community of Kabul. Certainly the Chinese, the Russians are keeping their embassies open. If the U.S. wants to be any sort of a player in how Afghanistan moves ahead, now that the U.S. is not there as a military power, then we've got to keep that embassy open. And then for accurate information about what's going on, of course, the daily broadcast of Democracy Now! Is an excellent one. CommonDreams.org, Truth Out, Code Pink Women for Peace has a lot of information on its website. So there are a lot of ways to keep track of what's happening besides the commercial media, which many times takes the role of the military contractors, the military corporations, and their need to have a war in order to make profits.
Thank you very much, Colonel Ann Wright. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio.